nationwide. Get the action in Pearl Horse Racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Got the computer plugged in, and of course, well, I got time actually before I got to go to the airport. But this happens to me. I don't know, once a week, once every 2 weeks that I bring the charger downstairs. We're sitting, Tina and I, sitting watching stuff. And speaking of which, we've come across the absolute dumbest show that is obviously one of those. What do they call it? Guilty pleasure. Ginny and Georgia? Georgia and Ginny? Is that what it is? Ginny and Georgia? Ginny and Georgia, I think. The mother, daughter, and actually she's got a son. She's obviously, a dangerous sociopath. But in modern television, these anti-heroes, they become, you start rooting for them, even though they're obviously, dangerous and insane. But we just sort of wandered into it. And Next thing we knew, we watched the full, I guess, is it two seasons? I don't even know. I don't even know if it, whatever it is, we just all of a sudden, you know, do you want to watch another one? Okay. Another one? Okay. And suddenly it's 6 hours, you know, you've watched the, either a season or a half season. All right. We got about, I don't know. We got about 10, 15 minutes before Andy joins us. Let me slip in some of the other results from the fairgrounds and elsewhere. Let's wrap up the fairground stuff. We did okay with that wave of goodness in the Marie Krantz. That was a frustrating day at fairgrounds, frankly, on Saturday. But congratulations, Armando Hernandez and the horse that was bred by Calumet and 5-year-old mare Mitch Merle, and you know 1340. And it was interesting because I didn't expect to like her when I wrote the races up. But the more I looked, the more interested I became in her, and it ended up being not so bad. 1340. Wave of Goodness. Out of Alain Romare, Mandalay Beach. And, Cairo Prince has come up a bunch of times today, right? The other, what'd she get for a fig? She got a 86 buyer winning the Krantz. Gentle Soul. Now, this one was tough. 10-1, Brett Calhoun and a hatful of partners. Martin Muller, Don Ladd, Rich Reed, Joe Boley, Arvid Siminis. Arvidus Siminis. I haven't seen that name. My father had an Arvid that worked for him for years. For years. Ran the lumber yard at Green Manor Construction. I haven't seen that name. Holy cow. Wow. and you know what's funny? You say the name Arvid, if you're picturing a you know, kind of a big, bald-headed, burly, you know, Slovak, that's exactly what you got. you know how they say you know, owners, dog owners look like the dog. Some people have a name, and they look just like the name would sound. Arvid, that's unbelievable. That made me think of that. Wow. Well, I thought, you know, speaking of which, and of course, with the as we opened the show, and I mentioned Howie and 90, and as far as we know, and then, you know, brought up Buzz Aldrin, who was my father's age, 93, and the other day, and we all, this is, I mean, I, this is a common, I mean, there isn't any of you that, any of us that don't have this. You know, after the Eagle game, Saturday. You say to yourself, or you think to yourself, I got a call. You know, I think I woke up Sunday morning because it, you know, the game ended, you know, late. The game was over about 7 minutes in, but I think I woke up on Sunday, and I said to Tina, actually, when she woke up later, I said I had the, you know, this strong urge to call my father, talk about the game. Yeah. This is a nice win for this Tapizar gelding, 6-year-old, Gentle Soul. And again, the certainly no pace to run into in this group. And two Emmys off the layoff. I think I wrote up that, you know, you wanted to be a little bit against two Emmys. Two Emmys ran great. Absolutely ran fine. But Gentle Soul drew in, and that's always tricky. That's a big win. 99 buyer, too. Got a serious fig. Yeah, career best by a wide margin. So congratulations to Brett and company. Brett's having a fabulous, if you haven't noticed, he's having an unbelievable fairgrounds. We talked to him. I'm sure we'll talk to him again soon because he's absolutely killing it. The Alley Slook I've been saving because I was hoping we were going to get Ike Thrash, and we haven't. So I guess I'll just mention that the Alley Slook was, you know, prominent immediately, and Louis Saez, I rode her with a lot of confidence, kind of, you know, stalking that, hey, you never know. And when she took over, it at no point, I mean, Chop Chop tried her, and at no point did it look like Chop Chop had her measure. I mean, I think Dooley at one point, maybe around, I don't know, after the eighth pole, it's tough. You know, Fairgrounds got the longest stretch going, the 1,308 feet. And I didn't ever think she was getting by. So Alice Look takes a nice step forward. And actually, I'm sure they're not unhappy collectively with Chop Chop's return. That was okay. That was okay. So they'll look to the Rachel Alexandra. We'll see if they keep him together or if next time we talk to Brad, which probably is Monday, we'll see if he split it up. And then, of course, came the LeCompte, and you know, this one, I think we doped out as well as we could have, because two fills I thought was going to be the right price. Ended up going off a tick over 4-1. Instant Coffee took the money and ran to it. Very nice seasonal debut for Al Gold's Bolt Doro coat. This is a Sagamore bred, and I mean, what are you going to say at this point? And not only that, not only did Al win the LeCompte, but he had two wins in New York. So things are going really well for Al. I suppose he would have traded all three of those for a better post for Cyberknife. Cyberknife through the 10. We'll talk about that in a minute. Instant Coffee, the disappointment, well, I mean, not disappointment, but I mean, Echo again, knock wood, everything seems to be okay, but they're going to have to regroup a little bit. That Bromley was a disappointment, obviously, kind of meekly chased the pace and then just folded, and Confidence Game ran okay. He kind of ran evenly and got passed, but, you know, it ran okay. But the top pair were the major story, and really Instant Coffee, the one that going forward. We'll see about the two fills must have gotten. Let's see, he got beat. How far did he get beat? Got beat 3 lengths, 2.5 lengths. What's where did it go? Had it and lost it. There we go. At least look. Got beat 2.5 lengths. So figure probably an 87 buyer for two fills. Which actually is a step forward off the street set. So not so bad. Let's see what Ravelli's thoughts are. But you would imagine that he's destined for another stake try. Turning to Laurel, let's run those down. And nice sequence. Brittany Russell with a pair of wins. First for Matticat with that L Street Lady. And good job by Callie Francois, who preferred L Street Lady to Chickiness. You got a couple of ticks. You got 480 with Javion Toledo. Nice horse. Now has won back-to-back. And in fact, took a step forward too on the fig front, up to 71. This is $125,000 Munnings, bred by T&G Farm of Kentucky for Saul Cumin and the partners. Plot the Dots, 5-1, winning the Jennings. and basically was cutting back to a mile out of that Queens County where he was pretty ordinary. Had run well previously at Laurel, ran okay in the Manfuso, but had won the conditional, that sort of money allowance in November. So seems to be a little better. Yeah, he's a little better at Laurel than anywhere else, actually. Hasn't, yeah, there really is. Even at Pimlico, not as good. Monmouth, not bad, but not as good. Charlestown, not as good. No, he's a Laurel. This is a Laurel-loving horse, plot the dots. No doubt about it. Wins the Jennings and basically got back to a career best, career top, which matched the 95 buyer in the November allowance win. Toledo aboard for this as well. And Our Nation on Parade, who did get to the lead, but then then basically leveled off and got passed. Not just by Plot the Dots either. Galerio, how old is he now? The cash has got him, right? Yeah. Yeah, cash claimed him for 50 last April. Second off of the layoff, and he ran well. Seven-year-old, now seven. Galerio, a nice horse too. This is Norm Cash. This is what he likes to do. He claims these, you know, these well-made, you know, well-established types, and you know, then runs them in these kinds of, you know, this was $100,000, $75,000 stake. The Geisha. This was the one good opinion I offered. Award wanted, 5-length win under Angel Cruz, a little under 5-1. For, of course, No Guts, No Glory, and Erica Upton, bred by Dr. Diaz, the Maryland-bred Macho Uno mare. She's now 6. And my favorite little mark on the PPs with a dollar sign I put to the right. That she was the right price, and she really ran. She really ran. In fact, did she, let me just see. Not a career best, but she followed up that allowance win. Good start to the end of her 5-year-old year, beginning of the 2-year. I wonder actually what they'll do if she seems to be in career best form at age 6, Macho Uno. But she got black type, and you wonder now if maybe they quickly move her to the shed. We'll see. Factor it in the fire plug. You know, we were trying to make this into a competitive race, but factor it in. Too tough. Carlos Mancia for owner Mike Sheffers. And this was a McLean and Partners, Pope and Company, and Phil Hager and such. Factor, 7-year-old, way back when. And there's really, really nice. In nice form. You know, won 3 races last year, 200,000. Now is a 11-time winner. 8-for-12 at Laurel. Factor it in. And has kept, you know, he's kept nice company. You know, he went to New York in the fall highweight, ran very well, got beat in neck but by Greeley and Ben. But factor it in. Angel Cruz for Mancia. Nice. And then Feed to Esprit, Jerry Robb, CJI Phoenix Group, and No Guts, No Glory. A Sweet Spirit Stable Bred, Maryland, of course, the Great Notion, 7-year-old mare. And she just managed to get to the lead and honestly, swaying to and fro, never really offered, you know, much resistance to her. And this, again, Callie said that she preferred Feed to Esprit. And swaying to and fro really got bet. She got bet down to 4-5. So you got 680 on Feed to Esprit. And then finally, Brittany Russell for Michael Dubb and Morris Bailey. Munnings Colt, bred by our friend Ed Seltzer. Carol Cedeno aboard. to win the spectacular bid, Prince of Jericho. Kind of basically shared favoritism with Coffee with Chris. They were the two obvious players, and they basically sparred down the stretch. But Prince of Jericho, under Carol, gets the measure of Coffee with Chris and edged away. So there it is. I guess I could reach to Andy. Let me slip in while we're doing. I guess I could save this for the Oaklawn stuff. I was a little. I had the Oaklawn action, and I just sort of ran out of a Saturday. You know, I did the whole 14 race card for Fairgrounds, and I didn't really want to. I don't know. I didn't want to launch into another set of selections, but I had looked at Oaklawn, and then kind of felt bad that I didn't write it up because it was. It was very playable. It was very bettable. If you didn't see there's a maiden winner from Saturday at Oaklawn you should know about. And that's Ben's Legacy. Jimmy DeVito, who easy to root for. And Jimmy sent out second timer under Danny Cabrera for Double Down. This is a Hertrick Fielding production out of their mare Autumnal. A more than ready colt, so who knows? I mean, long term might be interested in the turf, but for now, Ben's Legacy breaks the maiden, going three quarters, and an 84 buyer. And this horse was reportedly touting himself in the mornings, and might be a nice one. Happy for Jimmy to have a good horse. Later, Pate for Clinton Stewart, and owner Esther Ellens, a Virginia bred. By Chance Farm, a Super Saver filly, broke the maiden. That was the other maiden in that sequence. And, of course, in the American Beauty in the stake on Saturday, the one stake that we got three this weekend, this Saturday. But Hot and Sultry for Norm Cassie. Should get Norm on, actually. Norm had a good weekend for Alex and Joanne Leblanc. Always happy for them to do well. A Spitester filly that... moved over from the Asmussen barn after a mid-season layoff last year. So Hot and Sultry. Watch for her, and she got an 89 buyer winning under Cabrera for Norm. Nice. And that dam was okay, that right? Hot Water. I remember. Yeah, I gotta look her up. Was this a... this is... The Leblanc's only... They don't breed a lot. The $475,000 Keeneland yearling, Hot and Sultry, and had been away from July, and then Norm brought her back at the end of last year, right at the end of her three-year-old year for an allowance try, and she got beat by Ugiri, so she kept good company. So good slate at Oaklawn, and the reason I was mentioning the bettability. The pick five paid almost $1,500, paid $1,450 essentially, $1,448.40. This was a very reachable sequence. You had one upset, Spa City beat Caddo River, Eddie Keneally. Congratulations to Brian Schenvert. And in fact, I meant to send Brian a text. 11-1. And that was the only horse that you needed to get, you know, to be. You know, have a clever opinion. That was the one tough one. So, all right. Let's the rest of this we'll come back to. We got do some New York with Andy, obviously, and I got to get to the Leonidas at Turfway too. That was Wesley with a winner, first mention of the season, really for Wesley Ward, right? Yeah, he hasn't. I don't think he's sent out very many, to be honest. Of course, they resume tomorrow with those 12 horse fields in every race, seemingly over at Turfway. Andy Serling is set to join us. Andy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm good.
I'm glad to hear it.
I appreciate that. Andy, I don't think you've got a chance to hear anything from yesterday, but you were the first really out there sending out the condolences and the well wishes regarding Howie.
Is first important?
Say again?
Is first important?
No.
Okay, next.
You were the first that I saw that paid tribute to Howie, and you knew him very, very well. So I'd love for your thoughts.
Aaron knew him very, very well, and Aaron's what I told me. It's just, Aaron doesn't have a Twitter presence like I do.
True.
You dedicated the show to him yesterday. I doubt I would say anything that anybody else didn't say about Howie. You know, he does not. I mean, he was a terrific guy. It was a lot of fun. It's sad that he's been gone from New York for a long time. So I really haven't seen him much in years. And, you know, sadly, he's been sick for quite a while. So, I mean, even the last time I spoke to him, they called him on his birthday a number of years ago. And he basically just barely remembered even who I was. And I know it was hard, you know, Aaron had told me it was tough to see him towards the end. You know, you remember the people by when you knew them, not when they. And Howie was great. Howie was a lot of fun. You know, I used to ride back to the city from Aqueduct a lot in the winter, especially, but also during Belmont sometimes. And we always had a lot of fun. And he was an interesting guy who had been around a long time and seen a lot of interesting characters and raced him as well. And you know, I think as time goes on and people pass away, there just aren't that many people left from that period of time that were around with a lot of different personalities in racing, and Howie was one of them. And it's not hard just to see how popular he was with so many people, and not unpopular with pretty much anybody. He was a really fun guy.
It's certainly been. I won't say enlightening, because I think we kind of expected it or had known a little bit how widespread his influence was. That part of it has been striking. I mean, just how many people around the game, had some connection to him. Whether it's horsemen that spent time working for him. We talked to Steve Margolis in particular, but there's plenty more. And then even surprising people, Jerry McClellan, who you know, Paul Pompa's cousin, he said when he was hot walking in the 70s, he said how he was unbelievably kind to him.
He was a kind guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that people talked about it yesterday. I don't need to sit here and reiterate it. He was a lot of fun, Howie. You know, I mean, he was, my friends who knew him with me outside of racing liked him, you know. I mean, he was a fun guy. He really was.
The office stories, Andy, and that circle of friends that comes up so often. It seems.
You mean Harvey's office?
Yeah, in Harvey's office.
Yeah, he was one of the number of people that were extremely entertaining that spent time in that office. You know, people like Jack Brown, who's been sadly long gone, that most people don't know. But Jack was, and Aaron would, I'm sure, back this up, was one of the really, really, really great guys that you got to know about round racing. There's a lot of those people. Most of them are gone, sadly. Nick was in the office quite a bit. There are a lot of characters in that office, but Howie and Harvey were close, so that's why he would be in there.
Hesh seems to be the I see so many people referring.
Who?
The Hesh.
Who's Hesh?
I'm looking to you for you know, I yeah.
You mean Hash?
Yeah.
Hash.
Yeah.
Not Hesh. There's an E and A.
I'm sorry if my my pronunciation.
No, I mean, I studied somebody else. Yeah, Hash was a friend of Howie's. He was a really interesting guy. For sure. I mean, Howie had a real connection to people in the history of the game, you know? worked with Arthur Winnick, right, in Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Howie, I think that's what I was saying about how, you know, Howie is one of the last remaining people with connections to a lot of the past in racing. You know, as time moves on, it's a matter of life, right? People fall farther and farther back in time. It's said about a lot of people in racing. I mean, it's true of a lot of, you know, names and handicapping and betting that were known, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, but they're not really prevalent nowadays. But Howie had touched a lot of these different people and all interesting people, fun people in his box in Saratoga, including his brother, and like I said, I mean, it's just, you know, listen, Howie had been sick for a while, so it was hard, I think. But you know, the Howie that we all knew and loved for so many years was just a pleasure to be around. Whatever you were doing with him, whether it was the racetrack or outside of it. On his last grade one in 1997 for Dick Cumbel, who was his partner, I guess, you know, one of his longtime owners, but also his partner in some ownership stuff. Aaron knows more about it than I do. I knew Dick more because he's randomly cousins with my friend Bruce, who's not a racing person. But Dick and Howie were very close. And Dick passed away, and then I think two, 3 days later, literally, could have been the next day. I know Dick died that week. Influent, who Dick owned, won the Man of War. And that was Howie's last grade one.
I put a picture up with Dick Cumbel as it happens.
He was a funny guy. Dick had a long history of heart, I think some heart issues. But he was a character. He was always at Gulfstream, played the sheets. Howie had some good horses over the years. I remember when I think one of the first years I went to the DC International, Howie won it with Lieutenant Lark. Paid like $90-something. I remember I hit the exacta with Dance of Life was the favorite of the second, I want to say. Red Champagne for Ashley and Bull in the Heather. Well, I don't think that Howie's remembered by people for the horses he had, right? Much as the fact that he was just it was a lot of fun, Howie. You know, to know Howie, we just have a lot of fond memories of spending time with him. And, you know, I mean, it's you're fortunate in life to know people that are fun to be with, but the sad reality of life is these people pass, and especially when you were, you know, I was the track when I was younger, so I knew a lot of people that were much older than me, and many of them have passed. That's just a fact of life. But Howie leaves behind a lot of goodwill and a lot of fond memories, and I think that, you know, you're sad when somebody leaves, but I think, like many people, when you start thinking about Howie, you thought nothing but sort of entertaining stories. And there were many of them. Aaron has lots of them.
He relayed them. We had Steve Shea at the end yesterday that also had some funny, especially because, you know, the horsemanship stories, Andy, it depends on the horseman. In some, you stress the horsemanship side and you identify horses and accomplishments with them from that angle. But with Howie, there's as many or more stories about, you know, cashing a ticket and how much he relished that part of it. And that's not an uncommon part of appreciating a lot of horsemen
I made a score with a first-time starter. He won with on one of the early showcase days. It was probably 95. When he liked the first or his big $50 in the second half of the double. And I managed to get the price horse out in the first race for the doubles they played. Made a lot of money with that. Double paid a huge amount. Yeah, no, listen, I have nothing but good things to say about Howie. Hasn't really been with us mentally for a lot of years. I missed him in those years. I know Aaron did as well, a great deal. But, people leave behind. It's like Harvey Pack, you know, Harvey left behind a lot of good humor, you know. And I, you know, fortunately with Harvey, I was able to speak to him up until the very, very end. I spoke to him a couple of weeks before he passed. So Harvey was lucid until the end, you know. So I A, wasn't surprised when he was in the past because he just hadn't really been doing well, but, you know, talked to him for all those years and stuff. And but you remember people, a lot of people at the racetrack that have left us, a lot of people in life that will leave us, especially as we get older. You know, you notice it by the number of phone numbers you have on your phone, people who are no longer alive. Probably like a lot of people, I leave them in there.
Me too.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. But had a lot of fun with Howard. Used to stop for those hot dogs by the cemetery in Queens all the time, that hot dog stand right by the cemetery. And a few afternoons when it was a little too hot to stay at Belmont, we would leave and hang out at Rio Grande across the street from his apartment. And we lived down in more in Midtown. And it was fun. It really was. But, yeah, quite a career.
Really, very much. And we managed to... And I think touch. I just had Tommy Ventura last hour too, who was working for Steinbrenner when Howie was training for George, for Kinsman.
Yeah, a lot of people trained for Kinsman. Nick trained for Kinsman as
That's
well.
For a long time. Yeah.
Diligence. Yeah. Anyway, I don't have a lot more to say.
No, it's nice. I wanted to. I knew you'd be probably the last of the conversations formally.
Have you ever had that many Jews on one show? Did you see that for Howie yesterday?
It was strong. It was a big. It was almost a minion. Came very close.
I feel a little overwhelmed.
It was a privilege for me.
You unfortunately, you didn't.
Not
really around as much when Howie was around. You guys would have gotten along well. I think he got along with everybody. I mean, he was a very easy person to get along with. He really was. He was just fun. I mean, he's one of those people. You know, it's one of the reasons that a lot of us have no interest in going to the new Gulfstream is we have such fond memories of the old Gulfstream. And I understand that the world changes. Unfortunately, they in rebuilding it. Completely lost every single thing about it. It made it a great place. But, you know, it was going there and seeing different friends and knowing where people hung out, knowing where they were and how he was one of them. You know, years that I was down at Gulfstream, the years that I went there and future years before they tore it down, the early 2000s, almost 20 years ago. You always knew where to find Howie. And it was always good to see him.
And it's funny, of the South Florida scene, I had never really, other than the 99 Breeders' Cup, I had...
Before your time.
Nope.
This year, my years, 94, 5, 6, and 7, were my favorite years of my horse playing life. You know, if I had left... trading on the Amex for those years, I wouldn't have made the connections that enabled me in all likelihood get more of the experience, because Steve put me on TV during those years, Steve Chris, to have gotten the job that I have now. So who knows how my life would have turned out. So, you know, I discussed that with my mom, who was shockingly not happy when I broke up with a girlfriend that she loved and left working downtown making some money to go play the horses full time. But as it turned out, it was good for her because she married a nice guy, actually, and it was good for me because I got a lot of experience and connections and things that I otherwise wouldn't have had. It wouldn't have enabled me to have done what I'm doing now, which has been for me the best part of my professional life. And those were great years and those winters at Gulfstream. That was never part of '97, but all of '04, '05, and '06, they were magical times, and I have a lot of incredibly fond memories of Gulfstream. And that's one of the reasons it's hard to go there now. Besides, my guys don't like it. I just don't like the track, and it's not. It's, you know, I understand maybe if they built a track with that, if Aqueduct had remained all ours, let's just say, the alternate universe, and they had torn it down and built a smaller plant like that, that I would understand. But to have lost everything that South Florida has to offer and why it was so much fun to go there for weekends, you know, even, you know, when you were playing full time and go there and sit outside and all the different spots and things, and they just completely lost that. It's sort of sad to go there now. And it's hard not to go there and look around and think of how the people and all the people, all of us that went there, not everybody I know that was there in that time says the same thing. I don't go because it's just no fun anymore. You know, it's just nobody goes. There's nowhere to hang out. There's no different spots, you know. There are some great spots on Gulfstream. That bar at the top of the stretch on the second floor that went out to the tables where people sit outside and eat was a great area. Just a lot of great spots at Gulfstream. Press Box was an incredibly entertaining place to spend some time as well. Anyway. Memory lane is boring.
No, that's not true. The people people enjoy hearing it, to be honest. Well, let me let you mention. This weekend, obviously, you got this card for Gulfstream, but also I saw that we got the Southwest to look forward to.
Southwest, an interesting race,
right?
Yeah, no, it is. It's a very interesting race. That horse of Baffert's that broke its maiden. On Breeders' Cup Day or Breeders' Cup Weekend is back and running against a couple of Brad Cox horses, sort of odd horses, because they're both forward replaced horses. And obviously, the Bolt Doro horse, I don't have the PPs near me. He's got more speed by the other one. Bob's horse has a lot of speed, and he's not exactly a trainer looks to take back. And it's hard to be overly fond of looking at of the closers in there. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. There are some talented horses in there. It's interesting to see him coming back. And, you know, obviously, in all likelihood, Bob, the people, the owners of Baffert's horse are going to have to make some decisions because that horse is not competing for Derby points. And, you know, they'll get Derby points if they need them in later races. But my understanding is that I read something yesterday that he has until February 28th to move the horses.
Correct.
That makes sense. It's before the second to last preps. You know, I mean, that whole situation is a bit of an unfortunate distraction. My opinion of it doesn't really matter. But there seems this year that Bob has a lot more horses that right now are potential Derby type horses. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects things. And yeah, I mean, the Southwest looks good. I mean, the little comp seemed to have comp a decent race. I know it got a pretty good figure. obviously, Instant Coffee seemed to have improved. He did get a really, really good pace to run, having a very, very good trip in doing so. But he does seem like horse took a real step forward from this prior race to this one, a very slow race in Kentucky Jockey Club to a much faster figure here. And I think if he continues to improve, he could be a player towards the Derby. It's a long way to go. But listen, Epicenter, I think Epicenter lost to LeCompte, right? By a nose, but he ran a brilliant race in doing so. And who knows, maybe the good horse will be at Paragrounds like Epicenter was last year. And that's why that's part of the problem with, you know, giving selective grade ones when the two best preps last year were the Louisiana Derby and the Wood Memorial, and they're the only crew grade twos. They should all be twos. And the Graded Stakes Committee, unfortunately, dropped the ball on this year. I know it was something that had been discussed. And they should have all been made grade twos. We shouldn't be prepping for the Derby with grade one. And it also is just a randomness to where the eventual, quote, better, unquote, horses show up.
Yeah, last year's LeCompte was that Call Me Midnight.
Beat Epicenter by a nose, right?
Yeah, they had 30-1.
Yeah, Epicenter ran a brilliant race and defeat. The pace was very quick, right?
Yeah, and that became the whole, really, from that point on, it became part of the dialogue with him about, you know, remember, about changing his tactics.
That's a good point. Yeah, he was such a forward horse, man up. Becoming a very different horse this time with us. Oddly enough, he sort of swapped with Gunrunner, who got more, you know, got better when he got more aggressive. Though I don't think Epicenter got better rating. I just think he was good regardless. I was thinking about with the ridiculous Academy Award nominations coming out today that, you know, the Academy Awards of horse racing are coming up this week. There aren't that many preposterous nominees in the Eclipse Awards, but there's one in particular that's embarrassing, but in general, whatever.
I'm attending, actually.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is this a bet?
No, I'm there. I wanted to be there for Jay. I want to see Jay.
Oh, I told Jay. Yeah, he goes to the only time in my life, so we have to find a way to watch him. Well, he's coming to New York, and he'll have to pay for dinner.
Perfect. Perfect.
We still won't be even, but he'll be working his way back into my good graces. Well, the Breakers is probably a nice spot. I've heard it's nice.
I have not been there in 100 years.
100 years,
give or take. Long time. Long, long time.
Don't take anything in any way that invokes sleep before you go.
This is actually my second. I think I was there and actually got to sit with Dale the year that Dale won trainer.
Nice.
Which was really kind of fun with Frank Jones and who else was there?
Twice, it was enough.
Yeah. So that
maybe you could do some campaigning while you're there for people to give you the word next year.
That's what I'll do. Yeah.
Bring some cash. Bring some hundreds.
That's me.
Pass around the right people.
That's me, a glad handing dandy, if there ever was
one. That's a good idea. Just start handing out money to everybody. Bound to hit some of the right people.
Do you have any thoughts on? You referred to the race formerly known as the Don.
The Pegasus? Oh, yeah. No, it's like a fun betting race.
Yeah, it does. It does.
All you get is running. They did a good job of getting worse since running.
It's a nice card.
Yeah, I have no interest in looking through it, but I did glance at the horses in the Pegasus. I won't spend any time handicapping it. I'm not going to give them my business. But it looks like a fun card. It does, yeah. I have no interest in it, but yeah, well, I agree.
How about a quick recap, too, of the weekend, that Betsy Blue for Linda in the Interborough?
Yeah, the race came up slow, but she was wide. The rail was really good on Saturday and Sunday, so she was enough against the track that you can give her a little bit of an excuse in that situation. You know, with the slow pace and her trip, you can probably move that figure, you know, her performance up to a level of mid to high 80s. And I don't know if Lynn's going to go to Barbara Fritchie or points to the distaff, but, her next start should be in a graded race. We'll see if she can match up against, we would assume, some better horses in those races. But, she's been a really cool horse, and Lynn's done a great job with her. She put together a tremendous record. She's made now over $650,000.
Yeah.
Remarkable. And George Weaver originally claimed her for $25,000, and then I think Linda claimed after that for a little bit more. I should look that up. Yeah, she's a neat horse. She really blossomed. She's always been consistent, but she really stepped it up from a figure standpoint in Saratoga this summer. And she continued to run those races for the most part. I mean, obviously, this figure notwithstanding. She's a neat horse. Let's see. She was claimed for $25,000 in her second start. Oh, she's claimed from Blue Devil. I didn't even realize that. And claimed by George Weaver, and then Linda took her right back in the next start for 50. And she was right. She wanted the horse, so they paid more. And she was right. She never ran another claimer. She wanted a starter in the next start, and then she won the Bowery. She made $379,000 in 2022.
Wow.
$225,000 and $21,000. Not all of it for Linda, though, but probably about 150 of it, maybe a little bit more. And she obviously has, value as a broodmare. Sure, of course it was Blue Devil. I was the best. He was Blue Devil. I want to say I was the best of the damn. I wonder if Dale might have trained her. Oh, it's not available because I'll look it up here because it was an older card. I know that Dale did train and continues to train for them. There we go. No, trainer? Kathleen Farron trainer.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if she had her whole career, but she had her for sure at the end.
Andy, right after, we should mention, and I earlier, when I recounted the LeCompte result and talked about Al Gold, Al won races on either end of the stake, and that Slip Mahoney, that was a big effort, obviously, and 87 Buyer, Croupy remains winless. They were, what, a dozen lengths clear of...
Yeah, they both were on the rail for the most part in the race. So both were helped by the racetrack, but agreed, they both ran fast races, the best race the Croupies ever run. And Simone just backed up his prior figure, where he ran very well in his prior race. Yeah, they're both promising horses. I mean, Croupy's not as large a chance to break his maiden, but he's probably still okay. Maybe it's just a bit of a slow one to go. But I think Simone's speed will make him more dangerous. It's too bad that this race wasn't a little farther away from the winners. I think they might have been inclined to take a chance in that race. And the horse who beat him, Todd's, in his prior race, I believe, is playing the Holy Bull. That was a fast race. But I would also be careful about, you know, you had that Maker drop down that was claimed early in the day that ran a 96 Buyer. Now, it was surprising that horse wasn't a maiden special to begin with. On the other hand, that was kind of a runoff on the Gold Rail. And the horse will probably never run a 96 Buyer again or anything close. And you have to wonder what reason it was that Mike dropped that horse to a quarter right away. It makes you wonder if there's something, but there has to be something. Let's see what that horse does. So it's the third race on Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, the thing that you have to remember is when you get a bias, one thing you'll see are figures that will seem a little bit high, and they'll end up being sort of stick-out figures for a lot of horses in their PPs. The figure itself isn't wrong. It's just the racetrack created a false reality. I'm looking up the figure that Stonewall Star got, 73. Which is in line to its earlier races, but I still believe that horse has taken a bit of a step backwards, and I think was severely helped by the racetrack in that race. Though it's possible the track will be mitigating a little bit in the later stages of the card on Sunday, to be honest. So maybe the advantage of the rail mitigated a little bit as the day went on Sunday, after being very strong on Saturday, but I'm still not sure. You know, you see that 104 Buyer for Pirate Rick. Now, my understanding is that race may have fallen right on the split of a variant. So it's possible that you could say that number should have been closer to 96 the horse got last time. But we'll see if Lynn Cash runs him back into toboggans coming weekend.
I was going to ask you about Pirate Rick following up that other...
Yeah, because I don't believe the track was biased last time with two sprints. There were two sprints that ran like it was, but there were other races just were too fair to believe that those were odd outliers. He's front big. I mean, who knows, it's pretty quick. I mean, the time before that, he out-dueled Chateau. Now, Chateau can be a little thing harder at times. He's as fast or as early as there is in the grounds. This horse is fast. He's in very good form right now.
Well, the...
Gunite is back at
yes.
And who about Steve Asperson? He runs his horses. They don't sit around waiting for spots. He towers over that field in the King Cotton. I meant that as a compliment, by the way. I said to him in Saratoga, I asked him, did you intentionally skip this race, one race for another? And he looked at me and he said, skip! I don't skip races.
No.
He's flapping at Joey. He towers over that field. King Cotton. He's good.
Really last year, right? We got excited about him. It became, by the way, one of your favorites is back, too. Garhol is back.
No, he's Greg Wolfsbane.
Is it Greg that loves him? Okay.
Greg loves Garhol. An unnatural love for Garhol. Unfortunately, won his last race, Greg was still in England. So he wasn't there for it. I felt bad. I would tease you about it. He loves Garhol. I don't think Garhol's being going to be Gunite.
No, and it looks like it'll end Garhol's streak of going favored. He had been.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be favored over Gunite.
No,
I could be wrong about that, but I'm probably going to be right about that.
Let's see if there's anybody else that emerged out of here.
The Martha Washington looks like a race not worthy of its name.
Mrs. Washington.
Is it named after Sandy, or is it named after the mother of our country? And why are there two Martha Washingtons in racing? Was there a horse named Martha Washington I don't know about?
I don't. That's a great question.
Is it Martha Washington in Maryland, right?
Yes, the stake. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So there's one there. There's what is the significance of Martha Washington? Was she like the queen? She liked racing a lot. Is it the King's Plate now, by the way?
It is the King's Plate now.
Very disappointing. I think Charles Alderman said they should keep it for the Queen.
There was a Martha Washington who was a New York bred who ran 95 times.
In what years?
Looks like the 70s. Early 70s.
I don't think it's named for that horse.
No, I don't think so either. She was a daughter of Prego.
I mean, shouldn't they really have a Gulfstream with that crazy opening they have there? The crazy video opening? You ever seen that thing?
You asked me about this a while ago, and I've still not seen it.
Somebody was on an acid trip or something. It's insane. It's hilarious. I love it.
I have not seen. I will try to watch while I'm down there.
The fireworks and the Capitol and the monument. Rushmore.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I have. You know what? I haven't heard it. Maybe with music, but I think I've seen it in the background. Now that you described that,
that's hilarious. And it had forever. I guess when you create a masterpiece, you just use it for good. It looks like Olivia Twist and Defining Purpose will be the two big chalks in here. Wow. Yeah. Anyway, we done? Who's next?
Popo.
Oh, he must be eagerly waiting by his phone. Did he know Howie?
No, he wouldn't have known Howie.
Who's the
judge? I did start to say, it's one of those privileges that that I've had when I started going down regularly in the aughts and would go to Calder and John Parada would take me and introduce me to people and then
like
I started
the rats.
I started going on my own and whenever I'd go to Howie's barn, his brother was always there.
I liked Calder.
Yeah, so
what the big knock on Calder was.
There was no knock. There was not a knock.
A few days there in 1980, the summer, just to go there. I met Andy there the last day when I'd go down there in January. Problem with Calder.
Well, and we would went to the Summit of Speed several years in a row, which was tremendous
Speed
fun.
It was a great event. They had some really good races of those.
Well, that's all,
Yeah, that was the Summit of Speed was great.
Bobby Humphrey, great legacy of Bobby's. One of many.
No, the Summit of Speed was a really cool day. Princess Rudy was a great race. A once great race. There are a lot of once great races. We have our share of those, that's for sure. Yeah. I mean, I can see how, in today's landscape, how it sort of fell apart. I don't blame Gulfstream for that. I don't think it's fair. I think it's just the way the whole landscape has changed. But at that one time, that was a really fun day of racing.
Well, and
I thought that Sunshine Millions originally was really fun. When Frank first started it, and they ran the race in California and there, and they took the time out of NBC. I enjoyed that the first couple of years. I also see why it didn't hold up, but it was fun when it first started.
Very much.
The problem was that it cut into more established races at both tracks. I think also the finances of it probably potentially caught up to them. But it was a neat idea when it first started.
You gotta experiment and.
Well, it's like, somebody was complaining, some Nimrod was complaining about the Mother Goose moving the fall. And it's like, well, we're try to figure out ways to save important races, you know. The landscape changes. You adapt or die.
Well put. And then there's the matter of, you know, too many races for the same division and
divisions that can barely hold together for any of these races.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one change I thought. You know, we announced the changes in the Belmont Stakes weekend. I thought there are always going to be, you know, one or two you'll say, well, I would have done that or I would have done something else. But then I can understand the reasoning behind making changes. And I think a lot of very positive changes were made overall. And it's hard because there is a lot of history, but history is changing. Present history, past history. And if you're not adapting to the times and you're not finding ways to move forward and make some changes that at least have the courage to do them. And I, you know, I like the fact that we moved a few of the grade ones to Friday on Belmont Stakes weekends to maybe, you know, encourage people, more people to come out on Fridays for the big day. And, you know, I was very much in agreement with Martin when he first started talking about creating that big, huge day on Belmont Day. I was very supportive of it. I thought it was a really good idea, but I'm not really sure that it was. I'm not saying it was a bad idea by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that it's not clear that it worked that well, you know? So I think that if you don't have the ability to reevaluate decisions you've made and maybe at least try to tweak them and make some changes, then you're going to have problems going forward. And I think that's one of the things that this industry has suffered from for many years, an adversity to changing, you know, adversity to changing, I should say, as opposed to, you know, that's the way we've always done it, right?
Yeah.
Too much of that. There's too much of that in a lot of places.
Agreed.
So I felt we made a lot of positive changes. I think Frank Gabriel did a terrific job as well. It's not easy. And sometimes it's painful. And sometimes you do it. And Mother Goose is one of my all-time favorite races. And the list of winners is a who's who of who. You know, of who. Who meaning not who's who of who. You know, some of these races are. But gotta try to adapt or die. Move it. Find a new home for it. Try to make it relevant again. Because it had gone into the land of irrelevance.
Well, and for those that did not see, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, the tweaking includes on Friday three grade ones, the Acorn, the New York, and the Just a Game, as well as the Gold Cup and the Intercontinental. The Wonder again, the Jersey Girl, still, you know, early in the week, Thursday. But this makes Friday even much bigger, and Saturday still has got what, 9-10 stakes?
Still a big day.
Yeah.
I'm not. I personally, I would have gotten rid of the Gold Cup. I don't understand the relevance of that race.
The 2 miles.
At least we got the purse. It just doesn't get the participation, and other than Innovative Economy, I think it's been won by Euros every year.
Yeah.
So why are we creating these big purse races to just give money to Euros that don't support our program on a yearly basis, you know?
No, and the...
I mean, I don't have a problem with Euros winning races, but to create races to which they have a significant advantage and then, you know, sort of bang them out with huge purses, I'm not exactly sure what that's accomplishing. And once again, you try it, but it seems to be a race that and has run its course a little bit. We'll see. Maybe they'll have a great field this year. But we haven't in the last couple of years at least.
Well, nine stakes on Saturday, working backwards from the Belmont, the Manhattan, of course, the Met, the Ogden Phipps, the Jiper, the Woody Stevens, the True North, the Brooklyn, and the Poker. So it'll be a...
Lee can win a third. I'm a little annoyed at Lee, you know, going over again to Saudi with Cassa Creed. I don't know. It's not sitting well with me. Punished me for that.
Well, he'll swing back around for the Jiper.
Can I go?
I guess so. All right.
Thank you. It feels though I've done my time.
You have. You've been brilliant.
I don't think I've been brilliant, but I did my time.
Glad you said that.
I'm going back to looking at all the crappy movies that are nominated for Oscars.
I didn't even look. I haven't even looked yet.
I really like the Van Banshees of Inisherin, but the idea that it's now the darling of this is the smart movie this year to nominate just shows, I guess, how bad the movies were, how few movies people actually saw. I guess I have to watch All Quiet on the Western Front on Netflix. But I'll never see any of the new Top Gun, Elvis, or another silly movie got nominated. Oh, Avatar. There's that.
Well, having met Carrie Condon on the recent trip.
Yeah, she's talked about it a lot to her friends. She says she would have given you the Eclipse Award.
Well, we're certainly rooting for her, for Carrie. That
she's not nominated.
Did she not get nominated?
No, the young guy that got nominated. I would have to look at all the people potential. She could have gotten nominated. She was very good in it. Colin Farrell got nominated.
Okay.
I love the McDonough movies and plays as well.
You mentioned when it came out.
Yeah.
She has been nominated. She's nominated for Best Supporting.
In Oscars? Is she? I don't think so. Here it's on my Twitter, Best Supporting Actress.
No?
I don't think so.
No, that's too bad.
I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
She was getting buzz. She was getting Oscar buzz, as they say.
No, Supporting Actor, Brendan Gleeson and Barry Keoghan did.
Okay.
Oh, she did. No, I'm wrong. She did. She's very good. She's as good as any of them. I like Colin Farrell. I think he's good. Brendan Gleeson's the greatest. The guard is the general. You ever seen the general, the John Boorman movie?
Oh, gosh.
That was great. All right, I'm going to go. I'll see you later.
Goodbye. Andy Serling, everybody. And another brilliant classic. it took him a good, 12, 14 minutes to shake off the surliness. I'll tell you, Well, he does have a bigger responsibility than ever, because with Jay only making occasional appearances, Andy has to, I'm sorry if I didn't get Hash's name out as distinctly as I should have. I'll tell you. What are these days? No, I would never. That was all right. Actually, we got a lot covered, to be honest. I'm glad we touched on the on some of the stuff from Oakland too. Southwest is going to be good, and we're looking forward. We'll be looking forward to the end of the week, and Papa will tell us how the form to win glance looks. Popo, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Friday, not sure I'm going to be able to come on. I got morning appointments that are going to take me out pretty much all morning. I'll see if I can. I'll still chart them and have them posted. But yeah, I'm going to be off the grid first thing Friday morning.
You know, as we recap from the weekend, and you can kind of jump around and mention or single out certain spots. The part of the difficulty, one of the challenges when it comes to, any kind of a program, with all those firsters that we have to deal with and lightly raced horses and the maidens, it makes it hard to negotiate a card just because the information is so incomplete. And you had some winners. You had some 9, 10 to 1 winners of those maiden races. That if you found them, it basically puts you in a good spot for the on a 14 race card. You don't necessarily think you're going to run it, but you need to string some winners together.
Yeah, see, I mean it's. Some people really like playing the baby races. Not a lot of, data. So you've got to know trainer intent. I mean, obviously you can go off sire, pedigree stats for first time starters, how the trainer, if he gears them up or they need a couple. Just a lot of different factors you gotta, you know, you gotta put into the equation with limited or in some cases no data on a particular horse. I mean, there's workout reports that you can get. You know, it just depends a lot on how much you want to spend and invest to play those races. All depends on your level of risk too. Like I said, I try to be database, so I don't. I mean, if they're in a sequence, in a multi race, you're kind of forced to play them. But
yeah.
I don't particularly pick out certain, you know, maiden races. And in a lot of cases too, you'll hear things, and not that the talk off the track always comes to fruition, but then the horse goes off, you know, at a price that wasn't worth investing in.
Exactly.
Anyway, so it's some people love them, and some people tend to, you know, kind of watch them and maybe, you know, have an idea how the race is going to work out, but until they run, you really don't know. So all depends on what your cup of tea is for those particular races.
Well, and you know, I'm just looking back at particularly the early part of the card, and it's funny because when I was waiting for the changes to come out, because we knew there was going to be a couple of scratches here and there to deal with. And the more I looked, I was trying to make sure that I didn't lean too heavily on the obvious, you know, maidens. I did pick, you know, there was that seventh race where the two Asmussens were the clear two horses to start with, and First Offender does win and pays 380, and I did try to get Guadalajara, who wasn't bad, but finished fourth. I thought he might be an interesting alternative to First Offender. Sure enough, City Knights, I kind of shunted down a little bit, and he didn't really impact the race. So, you know, that one. But when I was looking through Popo, I wanted to make sure to have prices, and yet I really didn't get a maiden price. You know, everybody I reached for was pretty lousy, to be honest. That included that Onassa in the 10th. In other words, the spots where there was that Huntley $20 had no. I mean, there was nothing that would have got me to him. I did try Spartan Queen and Grapes for Eloise, and Grapes for Eloise she ran, but I couldn't find that other winner. That was another spot where you had a price jump up, and that was Huntley's race, actually, the fillies. That's right. That was the Huntley race. Early on the card too. You know, Evergrande, who felt like if there was going to be a, you know, that was a $1.1 million Asmussen, and you figured, all right, that one, if you want to lean on somebody, and no good. Gets upset, and you had, that was the horse we talked to Neil Pessin about that won and paid 20. So, you know, it when you've got those sprinkled around the card and you're playing pick fours and pick fives, you're a chicken in a pot.
Yeah, Steve, you can either go narrow in those races or you can play several of them. It was a tough to land on some of those horses. You had to have something that you couldn't see on paper necessarily.
Yeah. How did we make out otherwise? I thought the stakes were formful, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, Form to Win did an okay job. It was an outstanding weekend. I mean, in the Mary G. Krantz Stakes, the top three horses were Carpe Venom, Wave of Goodness, and Lake Lucerne. So it was Wave of Goodness over Lake Lucerne in that race. So that was formful.
That was good. That was good.
Yeah, and the Colonel Bradley, nothing. I mean, Ready to Perform looked like it was going to run a lot better, but just, quite frankly, was awful. The Duck and Kenner was moved to the dirt, so pass on that race. And the Silver Bullet Day, Amber Cascade, I don't know. I looked at the chart information on her to see if I could catch anything. I watched the replay and didn't see anything. She was awful.
Yeah, she was not good.
That three horse ran well, but just not good enough. And then in the Louisiana Stakes, actually were did pretty well. The top three horses were Mr. Wireless, Happy American, and Run Classics. And
nice
try. Happy American over Mr. Wireless.
Yep.
So that was formful. That was a decent exacta. And Lacombe, Two Fills just wasn't good enough. Bromley wasn't good enough. So, couldn't get by Instant Coffee. So, on those races where we've got limited data sets, you're kind of going back off the workouts and how they look coming in too. So, not a terrible weekend, but, 3 out of 5, I think, is how I viewed it. So,
yeah, the Run Classic was I really had, I thought a handle on Run Classic being ready to take a significant. I thought he was way the horse to beat, and I leaned way too heavily, and I particularly felt bad because I happen to be a Happy American fan, but anyway, I leaned way too heavily there, and I tell you who disappointed me was Price Talk. In the Bradley, and that was a horse that I thought I saw something, in terms of the late season development and the fact that he was a May foal and that, coming to full maturity, that he really might be in a position to become an authoritative force on this turf sequence in Louisiana. They'll run each of these three big weekends. And I wasn't necessarily in love with the ride, to be honest, by Giroux, the way, he had him sort of tucked away and he never looked particularly comfortable. But then when he had a chance to, find a seam and put in a run, he really didn't. So I don't know. I don't know if I'll pack it in, but we'll see. We'll see how they reshuffle that deck, and where we go from here. But Gentle Soul, that's another thing that you're reminded to always reboot, and that's one of the nice things about Form to Win. You get a horse that draws in that you hadn't really looked at. It's very easy to reset the deck and take out the Grays Creek, the scratch, and include, get a fresh look at it after scratches. And that's important to do, at every level.
Yeah, and to see how it affects the pace scenario, too.
Yep.
One of those horses moves in, and you vision in your mind the race is going to be run some way, and then another horse comes in, he has a different pace style, or he's, could be possibly running speed. So you kind of, you're right, you just have to reshuffle the deck altogether. And I mean, I'm guilty of that myself. I get a mindset of how the race is going to be run. And then, there's another variable introduced and I fail to go back and reshuffle everything. So
no,
learning opportunity.
Well, I'll tell you who I completely whiffed on. And I knew on the backstretch watching that ninth race allowance where, when Tappet's Conquest decided when they decided to run in the allowance after the scratch of Banishing, and so mentally you say to yourself, well, Tappet's Conquest now is the horse to beat, except that Determinately was the horse to beat, and I realized on the backstretch, oh, this horse is going to wire this field. It became obvious, and there's another example. Just don't. You can't make that blanket assumption that if this horse does end up in the race and with Banishing coming out, that means this horse is a slam dunk. That was really stupid.
Yeah, no horse is a slam dunk, Steve, when they go, I think he went 25 for the first quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
It was open, up by open lengths. And then I think he sped it up the second quarter, I think 48 change, if I remember. But yeah, out there loose on the lead.
Yeah, forget it.
Any horse can be potentially dangerous.
Well, all right, so we won't talk Friday from Gulfstream, but we will get the Pegasus, probably the all-stake pick four at least, or more.
I'll post it. I mean, she's got good data sets for that Pegasus. I'm using Mana 16th or Mana 8th on that track at Gulfstream. So, I'm not going to say I'm disappointed with the card. It is what it is in the handicap division. So good betting race, though, maybe.
Yeah, no, it's going to be all right. It'll be fun.
Some prices, yeah. It'll be fun.
I appreciate it. Papa Morales, everybody, for him to win, and we'll look at the snaps. At the end of the week, going to send you out into the race day on this quiet Tuesday, and we will talk to you tomorrow from Gulfstream, and the road trip season begins, and we'll come to you from Hallandale Beach. Thanks to Andy and Papo and Tommy Ventura and Neil Pessin. That's it. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. I got to pack. I got to figure out how we're going to pull this off, because this is an awkward time to pack. You got to have a little cool weather stuff, a little warm weather stuff. Shorts? Do I take shorts? How much shorts? Shorts? Sure. What do you do? I don't know. I'll talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.
It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge